All right, I am here with our good friend Dave Brown, host of the podcast One Band Five Songs, writer for years, running blog Oklahoma Lefty. Dave, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yes.
These year-end lists are—they take a lot out of me.
You know, you do a lot because you and Dylan do your lists, and the first. As of this recording, the first of those has dropped, and I really enjoyed that. And then you get all your friends on, and you encourage people to call into the voicemail, and you edit all this together. I'm like, damn, this is a lot of work. And I'm sitting here, and I'm complaining about my dopey, you know, top 30, top 40, depending on the year that I'm putting together. And in the last couple years, it's just come down to the wire. I'm like, I got to finish this. I got to get this up in still a timely fashion because I'm not going to be one of those people that drops my best of the year after December. Because, I mean, at this point, if you're not putting it out by mid-December, you're kind of missing the window for being part of the zeitgeist, so to speak.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm like, who really cares? I mean, maybe a couple hundred people are going to look at one of these. Maybe. Depends on who retweets it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called tackling more than you can handle. And I'm really good at that. You know, I talked a little bit about this with Dylan today, actually. You know, I had a podcast and then I started a Patreon for it. And then why not throw another podcast on top with Around the Ring? And I'm going to go back to school while I'm at it. So working full time as well. So,
yeah, my hat's off to you, man. That's rough. That is that's hard. I had to put my podcast on pause at the end of the semester. Just I was like, yeah, I've got a project and a paper due so I can't worry about anything else right now. So, yeah, my hat's off to you.
Yeah, we'll see what this burnout does in 2 years. We'll see. Well, we've got you here. I've gathered you all here to talk about your favorite records of 2021. And you did a marvelous breakdown on your podcast as well. And
thank you.
I wanted to bring you on and have you just repeat yourself over here.
Well, luckily for you, I've actually forgotten what I said. as I was even like, I was trying to think, like, am I repeating anything I wrote? And I think I might have even recorded one of those before I'd written the top 10 is what I did. So for those who are curious, and we're going to go through quickly like part of my list and then we'll dive into the top 10. But I did a top 30 list. And so my process, because no one cares, but I found this part of the conversation with a couple of your other folks pretty interesting, explaining their processes. So every year I start a tracking playlist on Spotify that's just the name of the year, and I just start dumping records in there that come out. And throughout the year I go back to it and listen to stuff, and a lot of times there's stuff in there that just sits there. One that just sat there all year long and I never got around to was the Dirty Nil record.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And after it was mentioned on some other podcasts I listened to. And so I just, when I was laid up with my booster sickness the other day, I created a playlist for the blog and wrote up some stuff about it. And I put a song from that album on there. I was like, I probably really would like this. but it just was one I never got around to. But then, you know, come toward the end of the year, normally I kind of know my top five, top 10-ish ballpark. And then it's the rest of the list that I almost have to put more thought into. And then I'll have strategic albums like, okay, like I know whatever, if I do 30 or 40, I know this is going to be the one that's the first one I talk about. Like, for example, on my list this year, I knew I was going to include the Olivia Rodrigo record, and I knew that it was going to be the first one that appears on the list. So in this case, it's my number 30 this year. We'll talk more about that in a second. But what was funny is this year, as I'm putting together my list, and then I go through the trouble of making a collage of the album covers. And in years past, I've put way too much effort into this, doing it in Microsoft Paint and first getting like all the album covers, but then having to shrink them down to the same size. And if you move stuff in Paint, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. And then this year you showed me a handy dandy site, Topster, that will do it basically for you. And that was a godsend. So I made the initial collage. And normally that's when I stop. Like when the collage is made, I'm like, I'm done. Even if I'm not changing my mind, this is the way, because screw this, I'm not redoing this. And this year I did that and I posted, I always do this dopey, just little coming soon, dot, dot, dot. Like, again, no one cares. But I throw that up there on the interwebs. And so this year I was like, okay, I really need to re-listen to all these records. So I started listening to all of them. And by golly, my list changed a lot.
Yeah.
Not the top 10, but like 11 through 29, a lot of shifting happened.
Yeah.
So I guess we should I'll quickly run through that 30 through 11. And if there's anything that stands out to you that you want to touch on real quick, let me know. So aforementioned at number 30, the album that caused much chagrin on the Twitters, Sour by Olivia Rodrigo. I'm sorry. This is a great record. It's just really good. Then number 29, we had an album called 39 by Passaway. Number 28, a couple friends of mine, Great Lengths, they're from Oklahoma, with their album Decade in the Sun. Real quick side note on this band, this is the third band name they have had. So originally they were called the Gnomes, and it's two dudes. Originally they were called the Gnomes, and then they were called the Beatless. So Beatless. That's hard to Google. And Gnomes was Gomes. And then they got in a bass player because it was a guitar drum gimmick thing. And they brought in a bass player for this record, Great Lengths. But it's really, you listen to all of them and you're like, okay, I can hear the transition and everything. Real nice guys. Good record. Very fuzzy 90s feel. And speaking of fuzzy 90s feel, the next record was the EP Wave by Waxwave. And you listened to, I think you really liked their last one, correct?
Yeah, I really liked that one. It was the one last year, I think.
Yes.
That came out.
Yeah.
And I listened to this one too, but I like the last one a little bit more.
They're an interesting band. So their first two EPs are this straight up like 70s Cheap Trick era, Surrender era power pop. And it's just this universal, phenomenal rock and roll. And then there was the self-titled EP, which is this more ethereal, shoegazy thing. And then this one is even more minimalistic and ethereal. And the vocals have gone from, they had two vocalists, and I'm forgetting their names. One's a dude, one's a lady. And she has now taken over the main vocals on this record. And it's very 80s dark wave. But it's good. I like it. And they're also very nice people, at least based on my interactions online. All right. So I need to hurry up through this. Then we had Escape Velocity by Dan Vapid and the Cheats. If you like pop punk and you've never heard Dan Vapid, he was in Screeching Weasel, the Riverdales, and the Methadones, Noise by Numbers. He is just a legend. And I will go firmly on record on saying that one, any good Screeching Weasel record had Dan Vapid on it. Two, the first two Riverdale's records are better than everything in the Screeching Weasel discography, with the exception of My Brain Hurts. And three, he is 1,000 times better songwriter than Ben Weasel. I'm not trying to crap on Ben Weasel. I actually know people that know him. And apparently in real life, he's a good dude. His online persona is weird. He had a bad night and he did some stupid stuff. That's neither here nor there. But this is great. And if you like pop punk, you really need to check out everything Dan Vapid's done. Noise by Numbers is slightly different because their base point for that project was the band Sugar. So they were trying to go for that Bob Mould Sugar thing. Lemonheads influence type stuff. But this is like the fourth Cheats record, and it's really good. Let's see, next up, number 25 is Snarl's new EP, What About Flowers. That's a really good one. Then we had Lavender Sky by Fight Back Mountain. That's a really good just punk record. Then let's see here, we've got My Colossal Truth by Night Dangers. And then from the next one is another great punk record, Twistin' the Knife Away by Heart and Lung, Red Scare Industries band. Great, great stuff. Then we had Hey Tori by Cherim. I think it's how that's pronounced.
Yeah, that's how I would say it.
I think there's something online somewhere that explains the pronunciation. I would have to go digging. Next is Axiom by Harker. They are a band from the UK. It's basically what if Leatherface and the Jesus Mary Chain had a baby.
I actually really like the Harker record a lot. There's a little cave-in influence in there too. It's a strange kind of like spacey kind of record. It's
you can hear if you've listened to any of their older stuff, like their previous album, which are No Discordance, I think is the title of it. And then the EPs they had out before that. And you can definitely hear the progression. It's getting spacey. I think that's a great way to put it. It's getting spacier as time goes on.
Yeah.
Let's see. Next up at number 19, we had Beach Bunny with Blame Game. Number 18 is the Pony album TV Baby, which is, I think you mentioned that on an episode.
Might have been the Patreon.
That's right. Yep.
The chart dive. Yeah. Great record. Yeah.
Yes. Let's see. And if you folks are not subscribed to the Punk Lotto Patreon, get on that. It's $1 a month. Come on, people. I am poor AF and I can do this. Number 17, we had Fake Names with their Fake Names EP. Have you listened to Fake Names at all?
I did listen to this. It's Dennis from Refused and then like a bunch of DC people.
Yeah, it's Brian Baker on guitar. So a dude from Girls Against Boys, a dude from another DC band, and then Dennis from Refused, and it's real good. Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Number 16, we have Kississippi with Mood Ring. That is so. One thing I've noticed this year is I've really been drawn to a lot of female-led indie pop, indie rock stuff. Snarls fits that. Beach Bunny fits that to some extent. Pony, certainly Kississippi does. And the next one, Oh My God, I Made It by Pronoun, fits into that.
That one's great. I love that one.
Yes, very, very good. Let's see. Coming in at 14, we had Stay Jaded by Lost in Society. Somehow I missed out this band. They've been around for a very long time. My friends in the Hudson Falcons have played shows with them, and I'm like, this is right up my alley. How have I never heard these guys? They're just one of those. You ever run into those bands? You're like, how the hell did I not know who these people were?
Yeah, they're those bands that like they run in the same like scene of other bands that you like, but they sound like other bands you like. And yet for some reason, you've never heard them.
Yep, exactly. Let's see. We're coming into that. We're getting close there, so we can dig more. A little bit. The next is Alone in a Dome by The Copyrights. I'm going to go on a limb and say The Copyrights are the single best pop punk band of the last 20 years.
I never really dug into them. Like, I just never really tried.
They are, okay, so they're pop punk in a very, okay, so it is a, they have a, in a lot of ways, they have a real 90s style. Not that they sound like a throwback band or anything, but they have a lot more in common with bands from the 90s, like, say, Sinkhole, which would mix elements of hardcore, Sinkhole would do Black Flag covers. When I saw The Copyrights a number of years ago, they busted out a cover of Waiting Room that was like, oh my God. Yeah. Everyone, the place went ape shit, and it was just great. So, but yeah, they are a tremendous band. At number 12, Sad Girls Club, I Think I'm Ready. This is one that made jumped way up on my list as I was doing my re-listen, because I was listening to it. I was like, you know what? No, I've actually listened to this a lot this year. These songs are great. It's like the Epoxies without a keyboard. If you are familiar, it's very new wavy pop punk, female fronted, tremendously catchy songs. And number 11, one we'll probably talk a little bit more about, is Cat Bite with Nice One. And this is one that definitely, when I listened back to it, I was like, no, this is tremendous. And I think what I really like about this, and you talked about this on one of your episodes, is it is definitely ska and reggae influenced, and I mean, you have to call them a ska band. That's what they really are.
Yeah.
But for so long, ska became synonymous with bands that sound or want to sound like the Mighty Mighty Bosstones. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's almost entirely third wave ska, even though most of those bands, third wave was basically influenced essentially by three bands, Operation Ivy, the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, and the Voodoo Glow Skulls. Because Voodoo Glow Skulls have been around a lot longer than people realize, even though they really only have one good record. But
I was going to say Fishbone would probably be another.
Yes. But the bands that ended up basically being pop punk bands with horns weren't listening to Fishbone.
True.
Now, Skanking Pickle was listening to Fishbone.
Yeah.
No Doubt was listening to Fishbone.
Yeah.
I don't want to throw shade on anyone specific, but certain bands, you know who I'm talking about, that are just, when you listen to their songs, you're like, okay, if I took away the horns and you slightly adjust the way they're playing the guitars, this is essentially a Screeching Weasel song. Those bands were just completely aping the Mighty Mighty Bosstones. And some of them are still making good livings doing it. But this Catbite record, there's so much going on there. And there's a, what I say in my review, because there's a one song that I remember hearing, and it's like, okay, this definitely sounds like an Operation Ivy song. And then there was a song that was like, okay, this one really sounds like Blondie. Creepin' sounds to me, really remind me of Operation Ivy. And then Bad Influence reminded me of Blondie. And then the Bitty Bitty Bon Bon song reminds me of Pass the Dutchie. So
that's actually a cover too.
Oh, Bitty Bitty Bon Bon's a cover? I did not.
Yeah, it's a Selena song.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So that makes it make a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
Why it sounds the way it does.
Yeah. But this record is great. And it is there's another ska record on my list, but this shows you what ska really is, and that it's not just what people think it is. You know, doofy guys in big loud button-up shirts jumping around drinking beer and, you know, playing horns. It's not that at all. And they don't have a horn player in the band, if I'm not mistaken.
Nope.
Which is cool.
This record is, if we were to do that thing, I don't know who does this for their reviews. I feel like maybe someone like Metacritic probably. If we were taking the Metacritic approach, Catbite would probably be the number one across all of the guests who've given us lists, and even our choices as well. Like, it probably would just be the number one record of the whole year, because we had so many people bring it up. Like, Paul from Tor Johnson brought it up. Dylan brought it up on the show. You've got it on your list. We have another person that's definitely going to have it on their list too. So it's just like, aggregate wise, that would be the number one record of the year.
Now, if you need something else to do in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to need you to compile that list, because that would be fascinating.
I'd be curious to see. I think there's not enough to make like a full 10, so it'd be probably pretty easy to put that together.
You say that now after like 2 hours in, 2 or 3 hours into entering this all into Excel. Hear me, goddamn Dave Brown, what's making me do
more work?
So into my top 10, at number 10 is Warriors with the Old Friends EP. This thing was just so much fun. When they, I think the first song they released was Roller Coaster. And I did not know this was a cover. I didn't know what a bleachers was other than the things, you know, at a high school football stadium. And I heard the song. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then I'm like, oh, this is a cover. Okay. And then when I saw the name of the EP before I saw the track listing, I was like, oh, I bet that's a reference to the Rancid song. And oh yeah, they do a Rancid cover on here too. And it is so good. It's, I think what I really like about this more than anything is it makes me want to dig deeper into Warriors. Because, in fact, the last time I was on the podcast, we talked about Warriors a little bit because with their 2017 release. And yeah, they're a band that I'm like, okay, next record I'm going to dig into when that comes out.
If you were to give yourself some work for one band, five songs, Warriors would be one to really, you know, give you some time to play around with.
You know, that's a good idea because they have more than enough releases to do that. But I would, that would take work. I would actually have to look on my, because I have a spreadsheet, a Google Doc spreadsheet of the upcoming episodes. And I have planned out up to, let's see here, episode 82. So I have up to 82 episodes in my head and prep playlists made with the five songs because I'm a freaking nerd and love doing this kind of stupid stuff.
What number are you up to on the actual released episodes?
I have released 24.
So you've got
years worth.
Yeah.
And now that's 24, not counting the two bonus episodes that I did a bonus covers episode for both the Donnas and the Mighty Mighty Bosstones. And there's going to be, so in the next few weeks, I'm going to do an episode on In Excess. And the bonus episode on that is on the Pretty in Pink soundtrack, because that soundtrack's amazing. And it's definitely, it's huge for my generation. Not that anyone cares, but when I do the Buffalo Tom episode, I'm going to then have a bonus episode talking about the No Alternative compilation. And there was another one. Between the Pixies and Concrete Blonde episodes, I'm going to do something about the film Pump Up the Volume and Pump Up the Volume soundtrack, because they are both on that. Back to the task at hand. So next on my list, number nine was Fresh and The Summer I Got Good at Guitar. Is a band that just somehow keeps getting better.
That was my thought too. When I listened to this record, I was like, God, this is even better than the last one. And I keep thinking that every time I listen to something they put out.
Yeah. And the other thing I love, especially about this one, is it made me go back, because there were a couple of them, like every record I've heard of theirs, for some reason I've been drawn more to their EPs than their full lengths. But this made me, and that probably has something to do with attention span, but this one made me go back and go, no, those full lengths are also friggin' amazing. And I will say, I think this has, if not their best song to date, one of them, Girl Clout, is just a banger of a 90s indie rock, punk rock song that is just so damn good. Keeping things in a similar atmosphere, similar space, my number eight record is Going to Hell by, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce your last name, Landy Hecht. We'll be right back.
That's how I would say it, but you know.
I'm botching that. And I went on a deep dive, man. I was like, I was doing Muncie Girls interviews. I was looking on YouTube. She only ever says her first name. Like, damn it. How am I supposed to pronounce your last name here? But this is her second solo record. Okay, no, this is her full-length solo debut, because the 2019 record, Gigantic Disappointment, is an EP in my mind, because it's less than 8 songs and it's less than 25 minutes. And to me, that's the cutoff. 8 songs, 25 minutes. You go over one or the other, you are full length. That's my.
I think we mentioned that there's something we listened to that had like 9 tracks and they were like, it's an EP. And it's like, no, it's an album.
I would say, you know, if the caveat is, you know, it's like 10 minutes long and you could fit it on, you know, one side of a 30-minute cassette, then okay, that I will let you call that an EP, because you know, you have Wiener Schnitzel on there 20 times or whatever.
Yeah.
But so Landy is the lead singer of Muncie Girls. Muncie Girls is a band that comes from the same UK scene that has given us Fresh, that's given us Great Cynics, given us a number of other bands that I'm forgetting at the moment. And it's they all kind of have a similar vibe in that there's a definite big 90s indie rock, punk rock influence to it, where they mix. It's like you could tell they grew up listening to the Lemonheads and Belly and Green Day and Stiff Little Fingers, you know, and they mix it all together, and it's just, it's fantastic. And this solo record is, it's really good. It's mostly her and acoustic guitar. She does most of the instruments on there, I think, except the drums, and her lyrics are really biting. She does great social commentary in her lyrics with the Muncie Girls, with her solo stuff. She's one of those artists, if like I find out she's involved in something, I'm there. You've got my money. Boom. It's done.
Is Muncie Girls finished?
No, not that I know of. They, okay, in fact, did some shows, if I remember correctly, okay, earlier this year. I don't know if she has moved. She moved somewhere for a while, and then the first album came out at least somewhat during lockdown. And it just might be a case where these songs are just different.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered, like, how does someone who works in multiple projects decide, okay, this song, I'm going to write a song for Project X. Like, for example, let's take someone like Chad Price. Chad Price sings in All. He's in Drag the River. He's a solo artist. And he sings in A Vulture Wake. At what point does Chad wake up in the morning, you know, have his vegan meal and a cup of coffee and think to himself, today I'm going to write a Drag the River country song? Or yeah, does he, how does that work? Because I don't write songs. I don't do music. But I wonder how that happens.
I've always wondered that, too, because I'm the same way. Like, it could literally just be a matter of planning ahead to be like, I need to write some Drag the River songs, and then just like sitting down and writing stuff, that, you know, off the top of your head. I don't know how music is magic to me, like how people can come up with
yeah, exactly, songs. Yeah. And I think in his case it was there hasn't been a ton of overlap over the years. Like he did his solo stuff when Drag the River went on hiatus, and those are pretty similar because they're both alt countries things, and there was some overlap with All and Drag the River, but a lot of the real heavy Drag the River years was also during a time when the Descendants were back together. And then A Vulture Wake is his current project, though there was a song on their debut album that it was one of the songs that he wrote. And I'm like, yeah, this would have been an All song. I could just tell. I'm like, I could hear Stephen Egerton playing this guitar part. Man, I digress a lot. Sorry. back to the list. Next at number 7 is Dave Haas with his album Blood Harmony.
Through your beachside town, laughing at the boardwalk clown.
this is his fifth solo album after the Doing the Loved Ones thing. This is his most Americana record to date. And it's interesting, the production on this is definitely different than his last two records. His last two records, Bury Me in Philly and Kick, had a very, certainly a Bryan Adams Reckless era sound to them. And this one has, and I hear it mostly in the snare drums. And I don't think I'm describing this correctly, but they sound a little more muted. That said, these songs are phenomenal. Of his albums, this one reminds me of his second album, Devour, more. It's still very much in the Springsteen lane that he lives in, but it's great. It's funny, our good friend Steve, your co-host on Around the Ring, he hadn't even realized that Dave Haas put out a record this year until this was on the podcast version of my list came out. He was like, oh, crap. And it completely upended his list.
Yeah, it was like way high up there on his list too. I thought it was hilarious that didn't even know it existed, and then it becomes in like the top three. Even I don't remember what number he had it at, but
yeah, we've actually seen Dave Haas twice. Once he played in Oklahoma in Norman at this place called the Opolis, and the Opolis has this, it's actually a really nice venue, but at the time had this gigantic, I think, picture of a cat on the wall. And it's real weird. So other shows I've seen at Opolis, I've seen Sebado and the Thermals. So it's definitely more of an indie rock type venue. And this show was, homie from Fake Problems.
What's his name?
Oh my God.
He's got like a big thing. He's got his own thing now.
Yeah, he's a solo artist. He does that band with Jeff Rosenstock that is unpronounceable.
Is it Chris Farron?
Yes, Chris Farron. Yeah. So it was Chris Farron, Dave Haas, and Rocky
Votolato.
Yeah.
I don't know how you say his name.
Yeah. So we left after Dave Haas because neither of us knew anything about Rocky's music. No offense to the guy, just hadn't heard him. Chris Farron was good. Dave Haas was really good. And it was a real stripped down. It was him and his brother, Tim, playing stuff. And this was, I think this was during the Devour time. And then during the Bury Me in Philly tour rotation, he was opening for a band also from Philadelphia, who shall no longer be named, playing in Dallas. And we went to that show, and that show kicked so much ass. It was one of those, I'm watching him perform and I'm like, how's this guy not huge?
I've seen him open for a few people too. Like, I want to say I saw him open for Dan Andriano, and then like they even sang together. Like, he came out and did a couple songs with Dan, and then I maybe saw him at like a festival, like maybe something like Crazy Fest or something like that. But yeah, I've been around Dave Haas shows a few times myself.
I mean, his stage presence is just top notch, and he's a good looking guy. And you're like, how is this not a thing? But I digress. All right. At number six, an artist I'm relatively new to, Nathan Gray, with the album Rebel Songs. I think this is his third solo album.
I've been following Nathan Gray solo for a while now. Let me see what I can pull up, because he has some weird.
Yeah, it's his third proper. Because he's got some live weird stuff.
Yeah, there's working title, Feral Hymns. I think there was even a couple records under the name like Nathan Gray Collective. So like, I think, yeah, there are. There's like,
oh yeah, because there's
two Nathan Gray Collective records. Now I don't know if it's that those records have the same like people backing him up.
Right. Yeah. I want to say, here's what we're gonna go with. This is his third proper solo album. We'll just go with that.
Sure.
And this is great. This is, again, if we're talking like the Springsteen lane. But what's interesting is this is a record that annoyingly only came out like a week or two ago, and I've been listening to it nonstop. And the thing that's hit me since I wrote my review is how much it reminds me of The Clash. And not in a way, not in like a Rancid kind of way, like we're going to sound like The Clash, in not dogging Rancid. I love Rancid, don't get me wrong. But in a way of, here, I'm going to take elements of you know, reggae. I'm going to take elements of rap. I'm going to take elements of all these other things and mix it together in the songs. And it also a lot reminds me of that middle era 7 Seconds that most people shit on, but I will defend until the day I die. It's stuff like the Praise EP and the Ourselves records, 7 Seconds era. And this is... It's definitely political and social commentary music, but it is, he's smart enough to not make it so uber specific that it will make no sense in a couple of years.
Yeah.
Because I mean, you put on a Dead Kennedys record, and if you weren't alive in the 80s, or if you're not like a history student, you're not going to know what in the blazes Jello Biafra is talking about, because he gets so specific. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is something that every time I listen to it, I like it more. And this is a tremendous album. And I really start trying to get this put together in November. And I reached out to him because I'd pre-ordered the thing. And I was like, hey, so I'm trying to do my end of the year list, and I've already bought this. Do you have a promo you can send me? And he was nice enough to send me the songs, and I listened to it, and I was like, oh hell yeah, this is in my top 10. I mean, it's just one listen and I was like, yep, this is so in my review I compared this to the aforementioned 7 Seconds, early Dropkick Murphys, Frank Turner, and U2, which I know is a very strange group, but in my head it makes perfect sense. Have you listened to this one at all?
Yeah, I listened to this one right after it came out, because it was one of those, super duper late releases in the year where you're just like, you chose now to release a record? But I've been following Nathan Gray for a while now. You know, I'm a big Boy Sets Fire fan as well. I actually saw his band, The Casting Out, who were like basically like his pop punk band he had briefly. We saw them at Fest, and like we had no idea who The Casting Out were. Like, we were watching them, and we're just like, this guy kind of sounds like the dude from Boy Sets Fire. And then, lo and behold, it was him, of course. It was fun little, like, find at Fest, but...
Nice. Yeah, I have... you talk about another band that I just completely missed. Boy Sets Fire was nowhere near my radar ever. And are they... So, they're kind of a post-hardcore-y...
So, thing. Okay. Like... them not being on your radar makes total sense because of the time and place when they came up. So it's tough. They're this weird kind of middle period of bands. So they were releasing records in like the late 90s. And yeah, I would call them a post-hardcore band, but like they have lots of clean singing. It's not like fully hardcore. There's emo elements. There's alternative rock elements. Like at one point they were signed to Wind Up Records, which was Creed's record label.
Oh, wow.
They were, major label band at one point. They're on the Daredevil soundtrack for the first Daredevil movie.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And then they have a couple other records that I think are on like the Warped Tour scene, sort of like I think Equal Vision Records put them out. So okay. They exist in this weird pocket of bands. Like they've done splits with Coalesce and the Get Up Kids, and like they're very weird, different sound. They don't sound like either one of those bands really. So
okay, yeah, that was during a good chunk of those years, I was really into Dropkick Murphys, Swingin' Utters, Hudson Falcons, stuff like that. Yeah, I was listening to that and all a lot. So
explains how you would that would bypass you. Like you would have been doing something completely different during that time period.
And I do highly recommend. Okay, cool. I will look into it. And for the kids out there, that was back in the day when you wanted to listen to music, you actually had to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And so it made it a lot. The barrier to entry was much higher.
I can give you like a couple records by them to start with if you want to do that.
Now, would they be considered like a positive band, like a posse, keep things a PMA type? Because I definitely get that vibe on this record. This is a very posse record.
There are some songs that are very angry, but there are some more uplifting moments. Like there's one that I'm really specifically thinking of. It's off After the Eulogy, which it's like the second or third track on the record. And it's a very angry song. It's an angry song that's like, you need to be angry about this too type, you know, angry song. And like the lasting phrase from that song is, where's your anger, where's your fucking rage? Like that's the main kind of like hook of that whole song. I saw that song live and it's one of the most intense, you know, songs I've ever seen performed live. But
I can, because like on the title track on the song, they've got Tim from Rise Against does a verse, and it's like, okay, I can see these guys are definitely in that same lane in a lot of ways. And it's certainly I very much get a Kevin Seconds circa 1986 through 89 era of what kind of Seven Seconds was doing then from Nathan Gray. And again, as I have espoused, I love that era of Seven Seconds. I think those records are often way often too shit on, and they shouldn't be. Just because it doesn't sound like the crew doesn't mean it's not good.
I say personality wise, they line up in some ways. So that's not a crazy comparison to make.
Nice. All right. Well, we should probably move on. Number five, we have Sam Russo and the Refuse to Lose EP. So this one is just, this is a lot of fun. In 2020, right as the fit hit the shan, I mean, right as it was just got bad, Sam Russo dropped a full-length album, Back to the Party, and it was freaking brilliant. So Sam Russo is a singer-songwriter from the UK. Most of his stuff is on acoustic guitar, but he perfectly straddles the Frank Turner, Dave Haas side of things with the Muncie Girls fresh side of things. But also then it's, you like listen to one of his records and when Spotify takes over and starts playing stuff, it's like, here's Iron Sheik, here's Red City Radio, here's Frank Turner. And it's like, so in some ways it's like, he's just perfect for me. Northcote from Canada is another artist that kind of reminds me a lot of what Sam Russo is doing. And this EP is, they released it basically at the 1 year anniversary of the album, and it's three of the songs from the record, reimagined with full band, recorded virtually, which had Dan Andriano from Alkaline Trio doing bass, a guy named Chris Stockings and Garth Lee Vickers. I have no idea where they're from. I apologize, guys, finishing out the band, and they do three ripping versions of three of the best songs on the album. The Widow. No, not Widow. Good God. It's late. I'm tired. The Window, The Basement, and Young Heroes. And it's funny, The Window has actually appeared on my year-end lists 3 years in a row, because it originally appeared on the Red Scare Industries 15 Years of Beers and Tears, I think is the name of it, compilation in 2019. It appeared on Back to the Party in 2020, and now it has appeared on Refuse to Lose. And it is that good of a song. It is a perfect song. It is so good. It's one of my just truly favorite songs. And every interaction I've had with Sam Russo, he is a sweetheart of a guy, and he just freaking rules. Have you listened to Mr. Russo much at all?
No, just what you played on your episode of the Wimband Five Songs. He's one of those guys, though, that, like, I've been seeing his name forever now, and I'm like, is he from a band? And, like, I can never find any, like, pre-existing bands that I was aware of. I think he's just, he was hanging around with a lot of those guys that was, like, Chuck Taylor, you know, Chuck Taylor, for resting on the brain.
No, Chuck, he's Reagan. Not a best friend.
He's not one of the best friends.
Yeah.
Like Chuck Reagan, Tim Berry, like people like that were doing solo records, Dan Adriano solo records. So it's like, he's got to be from something. And he has been in other bands, but like, they're not like super well-known, like Alkaline Trio, you know, like that kind of level of band.
Yeah. He seems to be a guy who's in a bunch of local bands, and he ended up taking off more as a solo artist. Mm-hmm. But after this EP, I'm kind of like, can you get a full band, please? Cause this rules. And let's see. So that brings us to number four, Illuminati Hotties album, Let Me Do One More. Record, even though it was supposed to originally be the second one, when they had issues with their label, they were on Tiny Engines, which fell apart, and so they were contractually obligated to give Tiny Engines one more record before everything separated. And so Sarah Tudson, who is Illuminati Hotties, she's the mastermind behind it all, basically went in and just knocked out another record and was like, here, you can have this one because I'm working real hard on this other one. And it was great. It's got this real long title called This Is Not the One You Were Looking For, or something like that. I'd have to go look
at the title. It's like Free IH. Yeah. Yeah.
It's great. It's the thing about this band is they are quirky. This is when I was trying to do a Substack, which who knows if that's coming back or not. I was doing a whole pick of the week thing. And when I talked about this album, I said this is probably the quirkiest album to hit the streets since The Replacements' Let It Be. And it is. It is so quirky. It is so much fun, and it's real hard to describe, but it's great.
Yeah, I really love this record. But I loved the last one too, like the Free IH, the contractual obligated release. It's great too.
She's a huge talent. I've enjoyed everything she's done. She did either production or engineering work on the Kississippi record. She produced the
Pom Pom Squad.
Yes, she produced that record.
Wow.
Yeah, she has produced so much. She's a brilliant producer and engineer, and someone at some podcast made a joke saying that they were wondering if Illuminati Hotties is actually her loss leader into getting production gigs, because she's super talented.
I love like when you look at like producers, especially you see like on Discogs, and you're like, yeah, these producers are known for their work as producers, but then you like go look at their personal discography and it's like, oh, they've also released like 6 albums themselves.
Yeah. A few years ago I joked on Twitter, and all 3 bands liked this idea. I was like, can we get a tour of Illuminati Hotties retirement party and Sincere Engineer, please? And I'm like, yeah, that would be a kick ass tour. If post apocalypse, if we could get that to happen, that would be great.
Yeah, that'd be one of those stacked lineups that, oh man, that'd be great.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I love all 3 of those bands. All right. So up next, the honestly surprise record of the year for me, because it was one of those things where I was like, wait, are you serious? How is this record so good? And it's the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, When God Was Great.
What have you done to me? I was leaving the city behind, bound with a reckless abandon. Not too often found these days. In an hour or so, I'd be standing there by the bay. I grew up lonesome. I was a lonely boy. I went down to Kingston when the weekend began. I had no one. I went down anyway.
Seriously, if someone had told me that a year ago, hey, next year, one of the best albums that comes out is going to be a Mighty Mighty Bosstones record and ska's going to be a thing again, I would have said, told them that you're fucking crazy, because the Mighty Mighty Bosstones have not done anything of real note since like 1997. And I would have been completely wrong. This album is so much better than it has any right to be. It is stupidly good. Now, if you're going into this expecting question the answers or don't know how to party or I'm forgetting the song, the ones on Tang Records, what those are called, you might be disappointed, because they're a different band. For one thing, Even though they still have like 25 members in them, I think only 3 of them are from that era. Dancing Guy, Dickie Barrett, the drummer. And I think the saxophone player, but so much of the other band, like Dennis, who used to play trombone, he's long gone. The guitar player, the guy who looked like he was 12 in the impression that I get video, or no, wait, no, it was the video for Someday, I Suppose. He looks like, I'm like, did you guys smuggle a junior high school student in here? He's so tiny, but he's such a good guitar player. So much of what made them a distinctive band and made them impossible to copy, despite an entire generation of musicians trying to for like 3 years, is missing from this album, but it's still so good. And when that first single came out, The Final Parade, which is nearly 8 minutes long, and you guys talked about this on the episode, and it's, you're right, it's like everyone under the sun is on this thing, and you're listening to it, I'm like, oh my god, how is this so good?
Because it's one of those, like, it's like, this isn't you listen to it and you're like, is this like some weird like We Are the World, you know, like Celebrity, like Everybody Gets a Line song? But it's really fun and really, you know, this isn't, what is it, I'm Not Going to Century City, like that song.
I ain't gonna play Sun City.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
Stevie Ray and Artist Against Apartheid.
Yeah.
Quoting Bono from Rattle and Hum. Well, that's a deep cut. Anyway, this is this song, apparently it's like kind of their story, but also the history of ska in a way. And I mean, they've got a bunch of guys from Fishbone in there. They've got Tim from Rancid and Operation Ivy. They've got Amy Interrupter, the Toby from H2O, who I've never listened to H2O in my life, but I enjoy his podcast because he does really interesting and thoughtful interviews. But yeah, this is just a ridiculously good album. You like this, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's in my top 200. I like this record a lot. I thought it was really enjoyable.
Yeah.
And I kind of hated like the way people kind of dismissed it, like when it came out. I was like, y'all are missing out on a great record, but whatever.
I must have missed that. So unfortunately, and I think I talked a little bit about this on my podcast. Because most of this band is middle-aged white men, and despite the fact that they have been, you know, champions for anti-racist causes for the entirety of their career, they made a misstep. And unfortunately, the wokes on Twitter got all pissed and just raked them over the coals. And it's like, okay, guys, they made a misstep with a lyric video. Can you cut them some slack? They're middle-aged men. They're in their 50s, for fuck's sake. What are you expecting here?
So the thing that I took away from that was the people who dunked on it and made fun of it the most were also the people who haven't heard a single Mighty Mighty Boss Tone song since 1997. You know, they're the people who are like, remember that band? Look what they did. It's like, well, okay, first you're missing the first chunk of their career where they were extremely like political and about racial issues. And then there's that whole second half of their career. It's just like, I think it was just people who knew nothing about their history were really the ones who were kind of going off on them. Yeah. Little tone deaf video, lyric video. Okay. They took it down. They got the point, you know.
Yeah.
The message is still good. And while I wouldn't choose to write the lyrics the way they did, it's a harmless song.
Right.
And in fact, again, it's actually a positive song, I think.
It really is. It really, really is. It's the downside of basically having essentially being a one-hit wonder, because that's what they were in mainstream eyes. They were a one-hit wonder, with the impression that I get. Most people only know that song. Mm-hmm. They don't know even other huge hits like Someday, I Suppose. Well, that wasn't a huge hit, but it's semi-hits like Someday, I Suppose, or any of the other things they've done. And yeah, it's a shame. And it is another glaring example of the stupidity that is social media. Next up, we're down to the last two records, and then you don't have to hear me talking anymore. This one is, so I found this artist through a PR press release email. I get so many of those. Do you get a lot of those?
I get a handful, and I don't know how. Like, how did they get my email address? I mean, I know it's on the podcast, but it means that somebody was looking for podcasts to send emails to. Yeah. I get a couple.
I get a lot, and vast majority of them I just delete. Yeah. And for whatever reason, this one, I watched a video that was linked to it, and I was like, holy crap, this is great. And it's so different, and it goes back to the whole female fronted indie pop thing that I talked about earlier. And the artist is Baby Queen, and the album is The Yearbook.
I'm
So Baby Queen's from the UK. I don't know what her actual given name is, but this is some of the most raw and scathingly personal lyrics that you are going to find anywhere. And the songs are these incredible pop songs that are beguiling at how much that is really going on under the surface. And again, this is not something I would have thought that I would have been into, but throughout the entirety of my list, and even if you look at the honorable mentions, which is has a boatload of stuff on there, there's a lot of stuff that is not exactly like this, but kind of in that same vein. And this is just, I kept going back to this record over and over and over this year. I really like it. And in fact, the song Raw Thoughts, I think is just, it's one of the best songs to come out this year. Have you listened to this at all?
No, this was one of those ones that I was like, who? Like, it was, and you had it so high up on the list that I was just like, I don't know who this is. I have no, like, I've never even heard the name before. Like, being from England now, it makes a little bit more sense how I would be like, have completely missed this one. But
yeah. Apparently she's going to be opening for Olivia Rodrigo when Olivia Rodrigo heads out to the UK. So that's that's a great spot.
Yeah.
And I think that would, so if you like the Olivia Rodrigo record, especially if you really listen to it, because it, again, it's a very good record. I think you would really enjoy this record by Baby Queen. Now, they call it a mixtape. It's her debut mixtape. And I listened to an interview with her and she's like, yeah, we're working on the debut album now. And I'm like, the fuck is the difference? I don't understand this.
Yeah, I remember you posted about that on, I think, Facebook or Twitter or something like that, and you were trying to get some clarification on it. And I think literally every person who commented, and I was one of them, we all gave a different kind of interpretation of it.
Yes. Yeah, I got many different answers. Many, many answers.
And I still don't know what it is.
I don't either. I think it's something that, I think it comes more from like the pop and hip-hop R&B side of music, which I personally am not as familiar with, but
yeah. I also think with bigger artists, it's also kind of like intent, like what is the goal of the release? Is the goal to, you know, promote it in a typical album cycle type thing? Or is it a, you know, here's just something extra as almost promotional, you know?
Right. Yeah. But I really, this album is tremendous. And, take some time, go listen to it on Spotify or your streaming platform of choice. I think it is quite good. There are some little interlude tracks that are just kind of spoken word things that are kind of fun, but it is, there's some dark, dark stuff going on in this record. And then my album of the year, it's should not have come to any surprise to me. I think I probably had this pegged as my album of the year when it was announced that this was coming out, and that's Sincere Engineers' Bless My Psyche. This is my grand introduction. I love this band so much. I was thankful you guys had me on recently to discuss the gorgeousness that is the debut album Rombithian, which was my 2017 album of the year. It was my album of the decade for the 2010s. It's phenomenal. And the more I listen to Bless My Psyche, I think it might actually be better. It took me a little longer to get into that. And I don't blame that on the album. I blame that on the way modern record cycles work now, where it's you release a bunch of singles before the album comes out, instead of releasing a single, putting out the album, and then releasing more singles and videos to MTV like the way it used to happen. And now it's like, okay, here's somewhere between 3 to 6 songs before the album drops, and here's the album. And I forget what podcast I heard this on, but it was described as it has to do with the way that album sales are now calculated based on streams. And so singles that are released before an album, all the lead up singles, all of those streams count toward the album's air quotes sales. So for things like getting, certified gold or platinum or whatever. So that's why this whole thing has changed in the last few years. As I remember as a kid distinctively, the one that stands out in my mind, 1991, Achtung Baby, U2's album. They put out one song before the record comes out, The Fly. I had the cassette single before the record comes out. They put out the album. Then the next song, Mysterious Ways, comes out with its own cassette or CD single. I got that. And then there was one. And then there was Even Better Than the Real Thing. And this process took like 2 years.
Yeah.
And the album cycle is now like 6 months. And it's over.
It's frustrating because like I've definitely been like, oh, cool. Because like people are like artists are labeling things as EPs whenever they're putting them out first. So like they're putting out like the singles and they're calling them like they put like a bunch of the singles together. They tag it as an EP and I go, cool, the record's out. It's an EP. And then I listen to the whole thing and then like, cool, I'm going to give it a rating and it's on my list and all this stuff. And then like 2 weeks later, there's like another new song on that EP. I'm like, what? What is happening? And it's like they're slowly building the record in advance almost.
Yes. Yeah. And I blame that phenomenon on the streaming services, mm-hmm. because what happens as the singles get released, generally, so like for this album, the first few songs that came out were before they actually announced the album. So you had Trust Me was released in the end of 2020. And
it feels like 10 years ago.
Yeah, no kidding. And so that's actually the first song on the record, and it had its own artwork. And then a couple months later, Tourniquet comes out and it has its own distinctive artwork. And then oh my god, I'm blanking on the song title. One moment, please. Out of Reach comes out, and it also has its own distinctive artwork. And then when they actually announce the album coming out. So all three of these songs at the time were released on Bandcamp as individual singles. Then when the full length album is announced on Bandcamp, it is replaced. All those individual songs are replaced by the record. And each time a song comes out, it then becomes one that you can purchase / when you buy the album, it's downloaded. Well, when it gets pushed to Spotify, they just end up collecting all the songs. So as each new song comes out, it's like, well, we're just going to package this together and call it Recluse in the Making. Well, no, it's just one song. Stop doing this, please. Yeah, I find that horribly irritating. Yeah. But this album, what took me so long to get used to this record, I think, was the fact that I knew 7 of the songs when it came out. So Dragged Across the Finish Line, the next last song in the record, was originally on that aforementioned Red Scare Industries comp, because their previous album was on Red Scare, and they re-recorded it for this, but I knew the song. And so they, before the album comes out, you Trust Me, Tourniquet, Out of Reach, Recluse in the Making, Come Out for a Spell, were all released as singles. So that's, you know, over half the record you end up hearing. And this is definitely a record that works best as a whole. Like, all these are great individual songs, but they work really well once you know them in their proper order, in place, in context in the record. So a perfect example is Tourniquet, is the second song in the album. And as it ends, like when the single came out, it ends abruptly. And you could tell, I'm like, okay, that's setting up to fade into the next song. And the next single that was released is also the next song in the album, which is Out of Reach. And when you listen to the beginning of that, you're like, oh, yeah, these two go together. And so now when you listen to it on the full length album and you hear them go one right into the next one, I almost can't imagine hearing these two songs apart from each other. It's in my head. It's like, We Will Rock You and We Are the Champions. These need to be played together at all times. It's like INXS's Mediate and the song that, oh my God, it's their biggest song. Anyway, they're a huge INXS song that had a video with Mediate next to it. And those don't get played together on the radio, and they should. Or the Green Day song from Insomniac that it was the one that had Jaded with it, that the video with Jaded. So it's there are certain songs that just should always be played together. And to me, Tourniquet and Out of Reach should be played together. And those two songs are my two favorite songs of the year. They're the two songs I listen to more than anything else in this year. And just like with Ron Bithian, this is some of the most heart-wrenchingly personal and laying it all out there, awkward lyrics you are going to find, and it just makes you feel like you're not alone in the world.
If we were to do the compiled number, you know, oh, we had four people pick this record for album of the year, this would probably be right behind the Cat Bite record, because not only do I love it, Dylan loves it, our good buddy good friend Corey loves it, you've got it on your list. It's like, well, Cat Bite and Sincere Engineer are probably the two most popular albums of 2021 as far as this podcast is associated with, and God, it's so good. Like, it's currently tied in my number one spot with another record, and it's going to be a coin toss probably when I get to making my final selection on these two.
So curious, man. Tell me.
I'll tell you. It's actually already been up by the time this I'll tell you.
Okay.
But it's just kind of like, well, which one's it gonna be? And it's probably just gonna be on whatever my mood is that day. Right now, I'm still kind of leaning towards this one. But I think that Deanna has this lyrical style that hits in a way that so few artists do, I think. To me, Sincere Engineer is going to be one of those bands that puts out like four perfect records in a row. Like one of those, you know, at this rate, you know, we've got, you know, plenty of time for, you know, some other records to come out. But assuming, you know, Sincere Engineer stays a thing, which I don't see a real reason why they wouldn't. It's one of those like
me knocking on wood.
Yeah. One of those four in a row bands, you know, like there's not that many of them, or four is like the maximum you'll get out of some bands, and then they'll release 20, you know, like.
Right. Yeah, no, it's hard. I mean, even I was actually thinking about this, because this is both of their albums. They've released two albums. They've been my favorite albums of those years. I think they're both damn near flawless. And I was thinking about, okay, so my other favorite bands, let's think. So if I think about, say, U2's discography, okay, their first album, Boy, was tremendous. October, not so much. The Replacements. So The Replacements didn't really hit their stride until the middle of their career. Frank Turner, I think Sleep Is for the Weak is fine, but his better stuff came much later. And then he's ebbed and flowed. And these two records have been just phenomenal. Just boom, out of the gate. I mean, if we're going Meltzer scale, where these are like 5-star albums.
Yeah. I also think, too, the smart thing that they've chosen to do with this band is not put out too much. Like, as much as I would love to have something new every year from them, it gives them enough time to put together just a killer row of tracks. And not like, yeah, we had a split that we wanted to do with some friends, so we just threw two songs together. And they're like, they're probably good, but how often is like a band's two songs on a split their best material ever, you know?
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. That is something that's been good. Is even though, as much as there was a part of me that kind of hoped Dragged Across the Finish Line would just only ever be available on that Red Scare comp. And I think I mentioned this in the previous episode, that I was so weirded out. I was like, why'd they leave Red Scare? Why are they going to this dopey label that had Mustard Plug? What is going on? And then I looked at like the lineup that this record label's had for like the last 10, 15 years. I'm like, oh, that's why.
They got some money.
Yeah, and you can tell Rombithian is very well produced, mm-hmm. but you could tell there more money went into this record, and I think it was even produced by the same people, but it was just I think they had more time. The sound is a little fuller. It is, but also the bands had longer to play together. Yeah. And if you have never seen this band live, they are tight. They are so tight. And I can't say enough good things about Sincere Engineer. I love them very much. And it also doesn't hurt that Deanna is an absolute sweetheart of a human being who has always been super kind to me in all of our interactions. She's wonderful. This is a band I will... As soon as I hear they have something out, I buy it in every format humanly possible. I've bought them digitally through Bandcamp. I have them on CD. I have them on vinyl. I'm all in on the Sincere Engineer.
That's it, Dave.
That is it. Sorry to talk your ear off for so long. Sorry, listeners.
No, I get off on get off. I'm gonna edit that line out. That's not how I want to phrase that.
I'll leave that in.
No, I mean, if you listen to this hour and 20 something minute thing, whatever. I love these conversations because, like, one, my prep time is very minimal and I get plenty of content. If I was smarter, I would just space these out for like the beginning of December to the end of January, but I'm not that smart. So, well,
if nothing else, next year, this should just be your December should just be. Guess these lists. Yeah. I mean, why not?
I should. But that wouldn't be me. I have to do too much. So thank you so much for doing this. Everyone, if you're still listening, go listen to One Band, Five Songs. Go follow Oklahoma Lefty on really most of the social media. So
pretty much. Yeah. Oh, and you can, speaking of the 5-star Meltzer gimmick, you can do that now on the Spotify. So if you listen to podcasts on the Spotify, help those algorithms and make sure, don't worry about me, but Punk Lotto Pod, you need to go and hit that 5 stars, smash that real good. Cause the show's great.
Where do you do that? I haven't even seen those yet. Hey, so, great show. There it is.
Yeah.
Now, there it is. 5-star review, One Band, 5 songs.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, now the annoying thing is you actually have to listen to the show on Spotify. So I on purpose was, because I primarily use another app for listening to podcasts. But so the most recent couple of Punk Lotto Pods that have come out with the guests I've been listening to on Spotify. So like, I want to be able to hit that 5 stars.
Well, thank you. And as for everyone else, thanks for listening and we'll see you on the next guest list. Thank you everyone for listening to this year's Best Of coverage. These guest list episodes are really fun to put together. I'm glad everyone, you know, enjoyed them. You can follow us on all the social medias at Punk Lotto Pod, voicemail 202-688-PUNK, and patreon.com/punklottopod. We can also get my top 200 at punklottopod.substack.com. And that'll do it. Thank you everyone so much, and have a happy 2022.